at 590 FM. Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. It's the Bobby Hour. It's Bobby's World. It's Bobby Marks, then Bobby Webster. Let's get right into it with Bobby number one. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's NBA, the NBA front office insider for ESPN, a man who just re-upped on a brand new deal. So congratulations, Bobby Marks. How are we doing this morning, my man?
I'm doing good, guys. How's it going?
It is going okay, I would say. It is going all right. It went to, like, kind of predictable yesterday. If you're a Raptors fan, it was like, hey, they took a Raptors-y guy in the range that they were expected to take, yeah. And they didn't make the big splashy trade that had been rumored all day. I guess let's just start with this. Is what did you make about the Raptors pick? They 33rd overall. It's a little bit of a more of a depth spot, but yeah, Christian Koloko, mm-hmm. The 7-footer out of Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, I guess I'll use a little bit of an NFL analogy. Like he probably could have gone in the first round, but when you look at centers these days, they're almost like running backs in the NFL, right? When you get to the draft, it's like you're not going to pick them unless you either maybe get to the later rounds or, you know, you see good value here. And, you know, I think that's kind of where I saw Christian as far as a player in the 30s. You know, I got, you know, I've interviewed and helped prep a lot of players, and he was one of, you know, the players I got to meet with, and he just has just a really interesting story, just basically coming over here to the States and, you know, from Africa and living with his sister, and kind of being on his own, and then, you know, going to Sierra Canyon out in California. And I think he's still, you know, certainly one of the older prospects at 22, but there's still an upside to him, you know, based on, you know, I think he could add probably some more weight. I mean, I think he weighed in about 220. I mean, he's got a 7.5 wingspan, but he's a shot blocker, rim protector. As I said, can finish around the basket. So yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, when you're going, and you guys saw in the second round, like it's not the best available. It's a little bit different how you do it in the first round, but when you're looking for a position of need and a guy that maybe fits your identity and you have a comfort level, you know, those are usually the players that are selected.
Well, and to extend your running back analogy a little further, as I'm going, okay, well, if the center who can play drop coverage is the new running back, well, then, yeah, you're not looking necessarily down the road at, like, secondary contracts, right? Like, that's where you're not overly like, hey, who cares? It's just like, can you come in now and contribute right away? And is that kind of your read on him, is that he is going to be able to come in and kind of give the Raptors that role immediately? Or is this someone that, yeah, it's still going to be a couple of year runway?
No, I don't think it's a couple year runway. I think he can come in just because, you know, there is a body of work at Arizona. You know, he played at a high level, certainly this year. He really, really had a nice role there. And you're right. I mean, it's like you get to a point where with centers these days, I guess, unless you're Jokic and I was going to say Jovic, but I have Jovic on my mind, but Jokic and and Embiid, and, you know, maybe I guess Gobert to an extent, but you don't have to pay a premium. You know, you can kind of spread your money around other positions here. And so, yeah, I do think I don't think there's, you know, you're going to be waiting, you know, 3 years from now to put them on the court.
So that brings me to the next thing. The last Raptors question for you is just simply, they've got some decisions. Like, if we are looking towards contracts, like, the reason that I thought that OG Anunoby was brought up in trades was not because necessarily the guy was going to be upset in Toronto, although I do think that there's something to be said about questioning a role. It's that if you look at their cap sheet, they've got decisions to make because of player options that are coming up, right? Like, OG Anunoby, you could essentially be looking on a shorter deal right now. Fred VanVleet's basically on a one-year deal right now. Gary Trent Jr. is essentially on a one-year deal right now. What do you just kind of think that the Raptors are up against here? Because it's a team that's capped out. It's a team that does have a young star in Scottie Barnes, a little bit of an older group ahead of them. But it just, it, like, when the patience and watch and develop strategy, do you think that the Raptors have as much time as it kind of seems to be portrayed as, which is like, this is a group that can grow together for a while?
I do. I mean, I know. Yeah, I mean, I know. We, you know, you get to a point where you think, well, wait a minute. You know, Fred could be a free agent next year, and Gary could be a free agent in 2023, and then an OG the other year. I mean, I think a lot of it relies on, you know, Masai and Bobby's relationship with these players, as far as how that most of them, certainly outside of Gary, have been drafted or signed when they were, you know, 20 years old or 19 years old. And, you know, there's a shelf life. Just, you know, I don't think you have to get to a point where you look at a contract and say, you know what, I think we have to move him because he's about to go into an expiring deal. But I get it. You know, I mean, it does come with a cost, and I'm sure if you're OG, you probably want a little bit more of an expanded role, and if you're Fred, you're probably looking at a little bit of a bigger deal. And then what is, you know, when you have, I don't know, $100+ million committed in salaries. What's the upside to the roster here? So, I think what happens too is that I think the free agent game is really watered down. I mean, I don't think you're going to be able to, like, you know, big market, big name guys. Like, it's basically like, you know, Woj made a good point. It's like the transfer portal, right? I mean, you commit to a school, and then, you know what? 2 years from now, I'm going to say, I don't want to be here anymore. So I think there's a way of, I think there's a, just a different way of building rosters, whether, you know, be through the draft last night and you know, trades, which I'm sure we'll see plenty of in the next, you know, couple of weeks. And then I think the draft is almost secondary.
I just think it's a little tough for them, Bobby, just in terms of we just saw an NBA Finals where, like, depth matters so much, right? In a postseason where depth matters so much. And if you're the Raptors, it's like, how do you address that when you're not a free agent destination, you're already a capped out team, and you're only adding, like, you know, a draft pick every year? It's just, that's the one for me where I go, how are you going to be able to do that in a timeline of those 2 years with these contracts?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see what happens with Thaddeus and Chris, you know, who are, you know, free agents, and you can bring back, and you won't be going into luxury tax, and then maybe they turn into something a year from now, or 6 or 7 months from now, or something else gets added, and you've got all your draft picks, you know, now that you can move. So you have a lot of, you know, outside of Pascal, you have, I call, you know, these sweet spot contracts. You know, you've got guys in that 7 to 8 range, you know, a bunch of guys in that 17 range. So I think there's a workable, you know, base of players that you can either keep, or if you want to kind of flip and do something else.
So at first glance, felt like a pretty solid night for the Raptors at the draft, but who is one big winner and one big loser in your mind?
I like Houston, I would say, just because, you know, certainly with Jabari Smith, we saw a lot of us, you know, I mean, I thought there was a kind of the top three, you could have flipped the coin. It's basically like, you know, do I want vanilla ice cream, chocolate ice cream, or strawberry ice cream, right? Like, what's my, you know, what's the flavor here? I like Jabari Smith. I thought he was probably the best player that you can put on the court right now. And then you get, you know, certainly, you know, Ty Washington, who fell, I mean, man, he fell all the way to, what, 29, I believe. And then you get, you know, Tari Eason, who, you know, played at LSU this past year. You get another, you get another power forward guy with big hands and stuff. So you get three solid, you know, players there. I mean, I was, as far as a head scratcher, I would say, just probably New York. Because as you said, like, we just saw, Boston and Golden State, and even how Toronto's built the roster through organically through the draft here. And the picks, I know we can make a low, you know, they got three first round picks. Well, two of them they're never going to get. I mean, they're not getting that Detroit and Washington pick unless really a lot of things break, because there's so much heavy protection on there. And then the Milwaukee pick in 2025, you know, that's 3 or 4 years from now to move out of the number 11 spot. And I guess we'll just say, you know what, let's judge them when we get to July 15th after they go through free agency. Is it going to be a big number that they go after Jalen Brunson, or what do they do with cap space here? So I think that's probably just, you know, you almost get to a point where you're just so impatient, you know, building through the draft, where they basically punted on it last night.
See, I'm okay with it if they do get one of those picks, and that they, you know, if one of those things does break their way, I go, okay, that was worth it, as long as you didn't love anybody at 11. But if you traded out of that 11 spot basically to dump Kemba Walker a year later, that's a nightmare. Like, it's to sign Jalen Brunson to an overpay. Like, I don't know. I think that you're right. This is a bit of a TBD, but it's hard to put. This is kind of like the Kings thing, is that, yeah, the consensus is always not the rule, but when you have a track record of ineptitude, you don't usually get the benefit of the doubt. And so, yeah, when it comes to free agency, it's hard to look at the Knicks right now and say, oh, yeah, no, don't worry, they're going to nail this, especially after a year where, yeah, they took on that Kemba deal and they signed Julius Randle to that contract that, like, nobody's taken. So I guess the potential is that Kyrie could end up there, right? Like, or maybe KD and Kyrie end up there together. What is your understanding of this weird leverage play, the hijack last minute of Kyrie and KD going, hey, we know you think it's draft night, but it's actually our night. We will be negotiating through the media with the Brooklyn Nets on the eve of the draft.
Well, I would say, to your point, as far as KD and Kyrie in New York, I think I have a better chance of becoming the president of the United States than that happening.
I mean, I would vote for him.
Like, for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might be
Canadians.
Better than some of the available options. Like, I was like, maybe, Sancho gets you crazy.
Maybe Kyrie. There would be no way that Brooklyn would ever trade Kevin Durant to New York. You got to be. That didn't happen. The Irving situation is just fascinating because, I mean, you know, in a perfect world, you know, Brooklyn would have him on a short-term contract, 2 years, maybe some, you know, benchmarks for years three and four. He's a max player, right? There's no denying he's a max player, but he's a max player year to year. And as you guys know, the business of the NBA doesn't work that way. You know, guys don't sign one-year max contracts and then becomes a free agent. They're looking for, you know, 3 or 4 years. And he does not have much leverage when you look at the marketplace with teams with cap space here. So, and even if he, you know, forced a sign-in trade, you know, the list that came out yesterday, you can remove, I don't know, five of them because of the hard cap situation, Lakers, Clippers, Dallas, those teams like that. I don't even think Dallas wants anything to do with him. So but on the other end, you know, you've got the Durant factor, right? Like, you know, what happens if Irving leaves and let's say he goes to the Lakers for $6 million and leaves 30. And what happens with Durant as far as he's the next domino? So it's a sensitive situation because on one end, you want to protect your interest in your organization on a short-term contract. But on the other end, you've got, you know, the fate of this thing basically crumbling into pieces.
I mean, crumbling into pieces, like, it's just, what are you really losing at this point, to be honest? Like, I've already created multiple Kevin Durant trades in the trade machine, one to Memphis, one to Miami. I like the Memphis one more, but yeah, I don't know how this organization could possibly give Kyrie Irving a multi-year extension without heavy protection. And frankly, I don't understand. Like, I guess I shouldn't say I don't understand Kyrie's position of not wanting that, but then it's like, it's hard for me to understand a lot about Kyrie. So never mind that angle of it. Bobby Marks, NBA front office insider for ESPN. There's a reason you just got an extension. You're great. Thanks so much for making time for us today, man.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Take care. That insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Again, that was Bobby Marks. We'll get Bobby Webster here in a couple of minutes. I'd love to get the truth serum from Kevin Durant on how he actually feels about all this. Like, if I could have one answer in the NBA right now, like, that's what I would want. Is this a Stockholm syndrome situation?
What are you doing?
Well, I get him tying his star to Kyrie. Like, he was enamored by Irving. Like, the talent is obvious. Like, Kyrie did win a title. He hit that, obviously, that massive shot in 2015. 2016. They had been friends for a while. Kyrie is obviously, like, well-respected by a lot of his peers. I think that, yeah, he's one of those guys, like, yeah, everybody has a friend who has a friend that they don't understand their relationship with them from the outside. And you go, like, why are you friends with that dude? Why are you friends with that girl? And you don't understand the nature of their relationship. And I think that's a little bit of Kyrie and KD. But once it became a situation where James Harden wants out because he can't stand this, you're beyond the vaccine thing, like, the up and down nature of whether or not Kyrie's going to play and how much commitment he's going to give you. And now for it to be, well, no, we the short-term contract's not going to fly, otherwise we're going to negotiate through the media. Like, their general manager, Sean Marks, was, like, speaking at the end of the season about how, like, they needed more buy-in from guys. And, like, that was a pretty direct shot at Kyrie Irving. And so I'd love to know how much of this is KD just, like, how far are you willing to go to be somebody's good friend? I'm sure he believes, like, given his available options right now, that, like, yeah, Kyrie is his best shot at getting back to an NBA championship. Like, it's not with Ben Simmons. But how far are you willing to take that? Like, it's Kevin Durant, I think this is his, like, 15th, 16th year in the NBA. Like, he's been around.
I just wonder how we view his career and his legacy at the end of all this. Like, how much it feels tainted, how much it's understandable, and, like, you know, what his outlook is at the end of all this drama and all this unnecessary conversations that seem to come around him, besides the fact that he's an incredible basketball player. Like, how do you view it in X amount of years when he's retired?
Well, I think that he cares about that. It's weird because Durant seemingly cares about it a lot, the way that he reacts on social media, the way that he defends himself, mm-hmm. which, again, I think that he has all the right to do it. But, like, he obviously cares because he gets a reaction from people when they comment on it. And it's a pretty visceral reaction. But, yeah, I really think that it would be fascinating to find out, like, hey, in quiet moments, how do you feel about the way this thing is playing out, and how much are you doing for a friend? Our friend, Bobby Webster, Raptors GM, on the line right now, probably feeling pretty excited. Looked, hey, listen, I saw your media conference yesterday after the draft. You had, like, you know, it was a good look. You also decided to be very stylish at the draft. You also went with, like, you know, you're looking good, looking comfortable. Seemed like, you know, you're pretty positive, had a pretty positive night.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, you know, got to have my best fit too. You know, everyone else is out there in their latest and greatest.
No rhinestones, though.
No, I asked everyone. I said, what was the highlight? It sounded like that was the best look.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad. Okay, so you guys stick at 33. There isn't any movement, and you draft a guy that a lot of people describe as a very Raptors-y pick. I guess let's just start with this. What excites you most about Christian Koloko?
Yeah, I think you're taking a kid who 5-6 years ago was just really learning how to play, and last year he was the defensive player of the year in the Pac-12. You know, on one of the best teams in the country. So I think that kind of rapid development and ascent is something that we look for. And obviously we've seen that with guys on our own team. So we're just looking to continue it with Christian Koloko.
So when you guys made the move down to 33 and you take this draft pick, was he the guy that you had kind of in mind all along? Were there I'm sure you had a bunch of different names on your board in that area, but was he a guy that even at that time when you made the deal was someone that you were already thinking about?
That's a good question. No, I think it's probably early, right? The deal was made in February. Mm-hmm. We obviously knew there was some risk in moving down. Getting Thad, I think, obviously, you know, saw some of the benefits with the leadership with our young guys, you know, in the locker room, which is a big part of that, and he could also play. But, no, I mean, I think that early in the year, you're just kind of betting that we know a typical draft. We know there's about 20 to 25 guys that we like in any draft, and typically guys will be around. But, no, we didn't specifically have him targeted. It was too early. We just felt comfortable in a typical draft. There's usually around that many guys.
So, yeah, you mentioned the risk, right, of trading down, and that's the way that this was viewed, is, like, you guys didn't trade a first-round pick. You traded down in the draft, and what was going to equate to, like, yeah, around 10 slots, which is what it ended up being pretty close to. Did that risk change in your mind? Like, when you saw some of the names that started to slip out of the lottery or into the mid-teens, the late lottery, did you have moments of, man, if we would have had the 20th pick, maybe we would have been able to move up, or if we had the 20th pick, we would have been able to select someone that we liked a little bit more? Like, how did that process play out for you during the evening?
Yeah, of course, you're sitting there and saying, man, if we were here, if we were 12,
right?
Can we get in at 15, and then we're sitting there at 20? So, yeah, but at that point, you know, that's the decision we lived with, and I think we were happy with, obviously, how the season turned out. So, you know, we'll take our chances with Christian, and we think that, you know, he has a really bright future.
I like the idea, though, that you would be thinking about it like a little bit like a fan, you know, where you're like, oh, this guy, if we were here, you know, like, is that, that's the way I think a lot of people process the draft, right? Most people are just looking at the mock or the best players available, and as they start to slip, it becomes, oh, okay, this is that, and what could have been. But I also saw, like, when you spoke yesterday that, you know, I think you said for the first hour of the draft, your phone didn't ring, or like that you guys didn't have phone calls. Why was it so quiet? Do you think that it was just based on your guys' position in the draft? Like, were you guys actively making calls? Like, were you picking up your phone and trying to call people? Like, did you ever have machinations of moving up or moving back? Like, what was your night like from the standpoint of your activity?
Yeah, it's a good one. I think maybe it may be more of a result of we did a lot of work early in the week, and obviously there's all kind of crazy stuff going on. So I think maybe you know, once the draft came around yesterday, we kind of decided what we were going to do. Whereas, you know, take it to last year when you're sitting there with the number four pick, you have something that everybody wants, you know, you're getting a lot of calls, right? And it may just be a kind of juxtaposition of last year where we were getting kind of crazy offers, you know, at one, at two, at three. And we were sitting there at four, whereas let's be honest, 33 is not the kind of hottest ticket in town. So it wasn't that, that enticing. But more than anything, I think we'd done some work early in the week and we knew what we wanted, what we didn't want. And by Thursday, we were kind of content to sit there and take the pick at 33.
So obviously yesterday, leading up to the draft, a lot of rumors and maybe the day before about OG possibly being a trade target and Portland being someone that was circled around that. How serious were those conversations in terms of the level of their interest?
I think when teams call you, I think you're never too sure, right? I think I said it last year as well, is, you know, people always ask how close are deals, and I always say, you know, have to talk to the other team. So, you know, I think I made the comment they weren't noteworthy. I think that's kind of what I stand by. Obviously, teams called. But, yeah, you know, as evidenced by no calls for the first hour last night, I think that kind of says it all.
Mm-hmm. Last one on your pick. How do you see him projecting next year? Because, like, again, this is an organization that's used the G League maybe just as well as anybody. But, yeah, he's 22 years old, and he fits an immediate need. And so I think for a lot of us looking at this pick less intimately than you guys, it would be that he fits in right away, potentially even as your backup center.
You know, expectations are tough, especially for a rookie coming in. I think Scotty kind of blew us all away this past year as far as what you could do. But if you kind of go back and think about, you know, recent of our first round picks in that area, it's just tough. You know, it's tough to crack the rotation early. Having said that, like, we're not, you know, we're going in truly open-minded. Like, there's no, you know, Christian has to do this or he doesn't have to do that. I think we're waiting for the experience. We're waiting to see him at summer league. But yeah, we're not penciling him in and saying he has to do this or that. But you know, I think hopefully we'll have an idea, you know, once training camp hits, once we see him in summer league, once we live with him for a bit, because I think, you know, what I said earlier on the call, his development is so unique that you don't want to put it past him, but you also want to be realistic and say, hey, you may need some seasoning. It may take some time to physicality-wise, speed of the game, to get up to speed.
How excited are you for the undrafted free agent crop?
You know, us, that's our favorite thing. So
exactly.
I think most of our guys were, I might have left the office at 1:30 and there were some guys hanging around just trying to figure out who the best undrafted crop was. I think we picked up a commitment from one of them. But, you know, we'll be, you know, looking at our team in summer league. We'll be looking at every other team. But we always feel like we can find one or two of those diamonds. And, you know, hopefully it'll be the same this year.
Yeah, no, I know that you guys can't comment publicly on, you know, what the ones that aren't officially done, but there is one that's kind of, like, pretty exciting. People are going to know the name of. Like, that's pretty good. Yeah, and very famous name. We just had Bobby Marks, but no, this is not Bobby Marks. Now we have Bobby Webster, Raptors General Manager. Thanks so much for making time for us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me this morning. Have a nice weekend.
Take care. Raptors General Manager, Bobby Webster.
What's that spicy name?
The spicy name is Ron Harper Jr., forward out of Rutgers, who is a really tough kid and someone that I really, really enjoyed watching in college. So, yeah, there's a few other names that are still out there. I wouldn't be surprised, like, at a couple of them in terms of, like, who the Raptors could be in on. I think that there's going to be at least one more name. maybe two, based on some of the just like direct fits that could possibly happen there. But yeah, I was really hoping that they'd be in on Johnny Juzang. He ends up, looks like he's going to be heading to the Utah Jazz. Someone that I just think like has potential to be like a real wing scorer in the NBA at some point in his career. But yeah, Ron Harper Jr., like, again, NBA name, NBA father, overlooked, tough, went to a tough school, was a major contributor for the team, two-way guy. I just think that, yeah, there's going to be buzz about him, I think, come Raptors camp. There's going to be buzz around trades all offseason. What I will say is that I don't think that the Raptors are going to be in on any Kevin Durant trades. So for those of you that are sending those in to me right now, we can do some on Tuesday if you'd like, but no, I do not think that that's going to be the case. But it's time for the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. So let's take a break. Let's come back. Unfortunately, the lock of the century, my most confident pick in the Wake and Rake missed. Sacramento Kings.
Mine
I'll never
was
forget.
Extremely up and down roller coaster yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Sure was.
We got it.
We're going to have Jackie Redmond join us to help us set up the betting lines for game. I almost said game seven. It's Friday. I'm out of it now. I'm just like in checkout city. Yeah. It's game five tonight, but it feels like a game seven because I think that we're going to have a result. Let's going to have a series result. All right. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailer, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Let's win you some weekend money. You're going to go out to the patio. You're going to go out, have a little fun with your friends. Let's give you a little extra spending money. It's time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. We're crazy about Jackie Redmond, our girl, NHL Network, NHL on TNT, WWE Network. Busy, busy, busy. Thanks for fitting us in this morning.
Of course. It's very early, so you can probably hear it in my voice. But I'm here. I'm alive. I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do this.
Again, as I told you on the text, you're not on West Coast time when you arrive in one day.
Yeah.
Like Jackie's like, it's so early. But it's like, Jackie, it's still 8:30 your time. Like you live on the East Coast. If anything, you know, you spend your more time like further out east, which makes you, this is like 9:30 your time. Like there's no excuses
here.
Okay.
First of all, let me inform you on a couple of things, okay, JD?
Okay, yeah.
Number one, I haven't been to Nova Scotia.
Okay.
I will. I'm going to right now. I have not been to Nova Scotia since Christmas, so there's number one. Okay. So you can throw your East Coast theory completely out the window. Number two, me and Denver, we do not agree. Like, people want to downplay the altitude. Doesn't matter. It's not a thing.
Oh, now you're playing altitude.
She was running hills this morning.
Oh, okay.
I am going altitude, okay? We do not get along, me in Denver. I am struggle city out here, all right? My eyes are like leaky faucets out here. I can't handle it. Me and the altitude, no bueno. Oh. It's awful.
Speaking of Denver, I want to ask about that arena. We watched the first two games, and I was astonished at the Colorado crowd. I mean, obviously, we haven't been spending much time in our Leafs bubble watching Colorado games during the season. It just seems extremely elevated. What's it like there, and like how pumped are they to possibly win that cup tonight?
Oh, they are excited. Like, the Colorado fan base likes to party. Oh my God.
No wonder you're tired this morning,
They have a time, these fans. It is wild. Super young fan base, which I didn't realize until I was out here. I do a pregame live stream with the league, and so we're out at the Pepsi porch, that's Tampa, excuse me. We're outside before the games. There's a DJ playing before game number two, and everyone's so young, which is great because we want young fans to watch hockey, right? But I didn't realize that in Colorado, the fan base was so young and vibrant. We'll use the word vibrant. They have a good time.
You caught up with Cale McCarr the other day. I thought that was really well done. First of all,
thank you.
He's what a little cutie pie he is. His rosy cheeks, and he's just there. He looks like a little boy face, you know, like he wins at the NHL awards. I'm like, oh, look at this little guy. But it's crazy, right? Like like Ailish and I keep talking about all day today, but he's on this cusp of winning a cup, winning the Norris, winning the Conn Smythe, and he's 23 years old with his little rosy red cheeks that you just want to pinch, and it's just wild to think about like what the potential of this guy is throughout his career and how big a star he can be.
You know what's wild about him, and we say this about a lot of athletes, especially in hockey, but I've been talking to people close to the team, and he has not fully realized his powers yet. Like, this kid is so humble. I don't even think it has hit him how good he really is. The fact that Wayne Gretzky is comparing him to Bobby Orr. This guy is going to go down as one of the best to ever play this game. And I know it feels so early to say that, but it's true. And he just has no idea. Like, I just think he's so young and so humble and comes from such like a great family that he does not realize how good he is. He is like a superhero that's still learning how to use his powers, which is scary to think about.
Yeah. I really think that tonight, like if we're just looking at this from like a gambling standpoint, which we are, is I once again am going to be looking to try and play him for a goal scoring prop. I just think that, yeah, +240 again on Unibet tonight, Cale Makar to hit or to score a goal tonight. Something that I'm absolutely looking at, certainly to get a point. I think that he's going to end up probably winning this Conn Smythe Award. It's hard for me to envision a scenario where he doesn't win. I don't think that the gambling odds are going to be very good in that regard, but yes, Cale Makar +240 to score a goal. It's only hit for me once, but I am going to continue riding it. Why did they have the NHL awards in a parking lot? Like where they went, like, where were you? Where you like, we were watching on TV and I was like, oh, Jackie, like, you know, Florida parking lot. How luxurious of the NHL to put you guys there. What used to be a bowling alley, the NHL awards. Like, where was that?
It was at, I forget the name of the place, but it was at a place that actually hosts, you know, swanky events. No, it was very way. Nice inside.
Austin Matthews walked in on the red carpet. They were showing us like his red carpet walk. It was like brick wall, no red carpet,
Royal Canadian
no media.
Legion.
Yeah, no,
it was
a yellow brick road, except there was no yellow. It was just concrete. But
the wrong
kind, you know, it's so wild about that. We did like a pre-game stream, or sorry, a pre-award show stream, and it was so incredibly hot outside. It's one of the most uncomfortable I've ever been interviewing anybody. Like, when I tell you, like, I was sweating so profusely, I wanted to be anywhere else. I was like saying to guys coming over, I was like, you don't have to do this. This is torture. You don't have to do this interview. Go inside, save yourself, Austin. Like, this is, I don't want to be here. You should not be here. Go inside, have a drink. This is awful. But it was a good time, and everyone was super nice. I was shocked that people stayed out there with us and chatted with us before they went in, because these guys are, I'm in a dress. I shouldn't even say this. It's so embarrassing. Like, the back of my dress was just wet with sweat.
Oh, I know what you mean. Don't worry.
I could not have been more uncomfortable and embarrassed. Like, Mark Messier is walking up to me and I'm like, oh God, please don't look at me. I'm just like, I'm just a melting mess. But anyway,
it doesn't matter. Nobody could see the back. Like, nobody could see back sweat. No one's thinking that. All you need to do is like keep it off your brow. Like, you can't have just like an immense amount of like brow sweat going down. Like, that's the only thing you got to avoid. And you're in a lucky situation wearing a dress, which is like, and guys get this too, because, you know, a lot of times wearing the suit and but it's like the one thing that just looks awful is the pit stains. And like that day of the NHL awards, yeah, like I had to walk. I walked up. We went and ate wings together for a promotional event that we were doing. And I walked for like 30 minutes in that heat. And I got into the restaurant and I actually felt embarrassed, because like Ailish came in. She's like, oh yeah, you're drenched in sweat. And I was like, yeah, cool. Why? Like, that's the ultimate nightmare, is being in public with pit stains. That's the only thing that looks awful.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I didn't have to worry about pit stains. And shout out to the makeup artist. I don't know how, but my makeup stayed intact. So setting spray for the win, I guess. I don't know.
Whatever that is,
like,
I want it.
Setting spray.
No, I want that. I'm like, yeah, give me setting spray. I'm going to use it whenever I go to the Blue Jays game when they close the dome and like just be
not
like.
Not going
to
help your pitch, bud.
No, that's unfortunate. I've still been looking for that formula. Okay, so the line tonight, Colorado pretty heavily favored, minus 186, Tampa plus 150. The over-under is at 6. It's minus 108. The over is at 113. Does Colorado wrap this thing up tonight, or does Jackie Redmond have to go back to the, you know, sweltering Florida heat and stand in more parking lots, more Pepsi zones?
Well, here's what I've learned is that when you're in it, like, I feel as though Colorado will wrap it up tonight. I have to say, I was very impressed with Tampa in game number 4. I feel like they what an absolute grinder of a team. Like, they threw everything that they could out there the other night. I mean, blocking everything they could. Guys are limping off the ice, getting helped put jerseys on in between periods. I mean, I was really impressed just with the mental fortitude of the Tampa Bay Lightning in the last game. Like, that was just a valiant effort, but I just think they're out of gas. I don't know how much they have left. I do think Colorado's going to win unless Vasilevsky, which he very likely could, just put up a stupid performance and steal a game. I mean, he played incredible in game 4 as well. But I do think Colorado wins. So I think the Avs wrap it up tonight at home. But the other side of me is like, well, I don't know. You're probably going to have to do that connecting flight back to Tampa one more time just for kicks. So then I have like the other side of me that's like, the universe isn't going to grant you this. You're going back to Tampa for sure. No, just for one more. But I do think Colorado. I just think, what's that?
I was just going to say, this is such the difference between content creators of, like, what the difference is of what we do, where the, like, Ailish and I are like, please extend the series because we don't have to travel, right? We're like, please extend this series so that we get more games and more things to talk about, because we're going to have to do, like, 2 weeks of just Leafs free agency preview, you know? Like, it's an every day creating a new Leafs preview. It's like, please just keep the series going. And you're like, please just let me have a normal life again. Let me just, you know, go about my business without traveling every day and having to stand in the Pepsi Zone parking lot. And, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's that, like, the universe is not going to grant me a weekend off. It's not going to happen. So maybe I should take Tampa tonight.
No, but that's the thing. You're competing against Ailish and I, where we're saying the universe isn't going to possibly grant us some good, like, Monday morning, oh, my God, Game 7 content. So, like,
yeah,
I don't know. Just, you know, like, competing interests. Okay, last one before you go. Nazem Kadri tonight, plus 1,200 to score the first goal of the game, plus 170 just to score. I don't love that value, by the way, just for people listening. But plus 1,200 for first or last goal. Don't mind one of those two. How's your Nazem Kadri feeling right now? Because, yeah, you still love the Leafs. And, you know, he scores that.
What are you
talking
about?
Yeah,
objective. I have no rooting interest in hockey. Yeah. What do you mean?
I know. It's fine. Sorry. How would you feel if you were a Leafs fan watching Nazem Kadri score that game winner? And his 7th game winner, by the way, in the postseason for the Colorado Avalanche.
It's such a bittersweet thing, right? I'm super happy for Nazem Kadri. I've always been a Nazem Kadri fan. I just, anytime you, as a Leaf fan, you watch a high-end player, I think it was a 7th overall pick, come to Toronto, and, you know, before it was cool to come to Toronto, before Austin Matthews was there, like when the Leafs were terrible, Nazem Kadri still loved being a Leaf. And so I think when you've grown up watching Toronto and hearing all the narrative that superstars don't want to go there, it's too much pressure, it's too hard to play there, you can't have a life. Like, Nazem Kadri never bought into that. He loved being a Leaf. He really did bleed blue. He loved it. So I've always rooted for those types of players, and I loved him as a Leaf. I was sad to see him go. So I'm happy for him as an individual that he's enjoying some success, especially when you look at just his individual journey as well, right? I think people are hockey fans outside of Toronto and outside of Colorado, even as recently as last season, have misunderstood Nazem Kadri the player. You know, he's had the knock of being a dirty player, and I've never felt that he's a dirty player. I've felt that he's a very passionate player that has struggled to contain his emotions when the stakes are super high. And now we're seeing a player that has learned how to channel that energy and become a game breaker. I mean, this guy has no thumb, and he comes into the game the other day and scores the OT winner because of course he does. Of course he does. That's Nazem Kadri. So I'm super happy for him, but it's hard not to think about the Leafs' decision to trade him, which I can understand after the suspensions and bringing myself back to that time. But you look at how that deal has played out, and it's hard not to be like, why? Why wasn't this better for us? Why wasn't this better for Toronto Maple Leafs fans? But it's going to be the real test will be watching him lift the cup over his head. What will that emotion be for us? Will it be happiness or will it be anger? I don't know. I think most people, they'll be happy for him, though.
Yeah, I think you summarized it well, though, is that, like, It is complicated, right? Because you think, well, partially Kadri did this to himself in terms of pushing him out of Toronto. And a lot of fans felt like he needed to leave. And when you make mistakes, it's like making a mistake is one thing. It's when you make repeated mistakes where it's harder to judge people who become critical of that. And that's what happened to Kadri. But I think that what makes it toughest for me when I think about it is that Kadri got suspended again last year, right? Like, he got suspended last year. Did Colorado say, well, no, we can't trust him and we have to trade him? No. And so there were a lot of media people and a lot of fans who said that, like, Kadri has to go, right, after the second straight exit when it came to that. And people were like, oh, well, it'll be Dubas's ass if he does it. And it's like, well, you know what? Sometimes as a leader, you have to have conviction in your people and say, you know what? I don't think it's going to be the same. And I do think things can change. And you certainly have to have a tipping point as a general manager where you say, you can't just make a trade for making the sake of a trade. And I think it's very strange that this fan base has gone like, you can't trade Nylander just to trade Nylander. You can't trade Marner just to trade Marner. But that with Kadri, it was okay. And with Dubas, for whatever reason, like, he gets a bit of a pass from a certain section of the fan base because they go, well, he had to make a trade. And I keep looking back on that and going, yeah, you know what? There is a bit of revisionist history with this. We are playing hindsight a bit, but not many people loved the trade at the time in terms of the value. Like, pretty much everyone universally thought the Leafs got killed in terms of value in that trade. And it wasn't even like the one that they had tried before that was all that good. Like, they signed TJ Brody in the offseason the next year. The idea that they were going to, like, trade for him and give up Kadri for one extra year of TJ Brody would have been nuts. So, yeah, it's tough for me. I don't believe in the toxic positivity of just be happy for Nazem Kadri because, like, I grew up cheering for the Toronto Maple Leafs, not the Nazem Kadris. And so, yeah, it's not that way for me. And I don't think it should be that way for anybody. But I think you can be happy for Kadri. I think that you can be complicated. You can be a little torn on it. You can feel a little bit complicated about it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, like, that trade, it hurt the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, more than people even realize. That more than people are willing to even accept. And for whatever reason, like, some people need to process it with, like, just be quiet and move on. But, yeah, I think that the more you reflect on it, the more you realize how damaging it was, how unnecessary it was, and how, yeah, it really is one of the like, worst moments in the Leafs, like, last decade. It's a really, really tough one to get over.
I will say this, and I'm not justifying the return for Kadri, but I do often wonder, like, maybe I'm wrong here because he does get suspended, you know, last year in the postseason with Colorado, so maybe it's a moot point. But I do wonder how much that deal from Kadri's standpoint changed him as a person and a player. Because you talk to him, and I know there's been interviews done, you know, publicly, but you talk to him off camera too, like, it really hurt him. It really truly was devastating for him. And it meant also a lot to him that after all of that, you know, the Leafs mean so much to him, then he gets dealt and he's crushed by it. Then he gets suspended again and he's frustrated with himself, and Colorado really stands by him, the team, the coach, the front office. And I wonder how much that impacts him as a person and creates the player that we're seeing today. Because without that, maybe he doesn't grow. I don't know. We'll never know because we can't live that alternate reality. But at the end of the day, you still, you know, you can still stand by the point that you wish you got something better for him, you know, because he's just like 7th overall pick. And he was awesome as a Leaf, and he was very impactful when he was in the lineup in the postseason. So, anyways, we could talk about this for hours, probably.
Yeah, and listen, I think that I really want Kadri to lift that cup, but I don't think that I'll be overly thrilled about when he decides to bring it here, potentially. It's like, don't bring it here, you know? Just don't.
I bet he can't wait to bring it there.
I know. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot that weekend. Jackie Redmond, go back to bed. It's so early for you. However will you ever survive? You'll be all right. You'll do great.
Feel bad for you. Yeah, so hard.
Yeah, the person with a million jobs who probably never sleeps. Again, NHL Network, NHL on TNT, WWE Network, Peacock TV. You go on down the line. It's Jackie Redmond. Thanks so much for making time this morning.
Thanks for having me, guys. I also like the under. See ya.
Okay. See ya. All right. That's Jackie's pick then. We're going with the under. The under on Unibet right now is minus 108. All right. Let's move into our best bets in the Toronto Blue Jays game tonight. I'm guessing. Do you have any other thoughts? Do you have a bet? Is your bet from this game?
No, it's not. But I like I was trying to find value on Kadri as well, not just on goal scoring, but over 2 points or 2 points. Yeah. As over 1.5 points, sorry, is plus 375. I could see it happening. Got a little bit more value than just goal scoring. And if you think the Avs are going to win, I think they could win in regulation, minus 112. Those are the two that I would play.
Yeah, minus 112 for an Avs regulation win is...
Oh, and I had one more.
What do you got?
Over one goal, or I keep saying over, but over one, 0.5 goals, or one goal to be scored in the first 5 minutes. That's happened almost every game, or early over in the first 10 minutes. Plus 180 for 5 minutes and minus 157 for 10 minutes. The puck goes in the net quite often very early in these two games. They come out firing. I could see that happening tonight, especially with a lot on the line, a cup to be won, or a team that really needs to earn the game to come back to their own arena. I could see that happening.
I like every single one of those bets.
Thank you so much.
I am a big fan of all of them. I am a gambler, so it's usually like I'm easily talked into things, but I still think that is that's a good one. I like that one a lot. Okay, so the Toronto Blue Jays tonight, again, they are in action against the Milwaukee Brewers. A little bit of interleague play, which I think is becoming more common next season. But yeah, it's Alec Manoah night. And Alec Manoah night means that the Blue Jays get to be heavily, heavily favored. That's just the way that it goes with this baseball team. The Toronto Blue Jays are minus 139 favorites. Maybe not that heavily tonight, but yeah, the line has actually moved quite a bit because that's not what it was just even an hour ago. The Milwaukee Brewers plus 120 on the bump today. Kind of like the Jays here, kind of like Manoah. Adrian Hauser's all right, but he's a right-handed pitcher that I think is pretty mediocre.
4.24 ERA.
Yeah, 4-7 this year. I'm actually a little surprised by this line. I wonder if this has to do with maybe some potential George Springer news that might come our way, honestly.
Yeah, I think the Jays money line is probably going to be my play just because I expected it to be a bit heavier in terms of them being the favorites. The Brewers are 1-8 in their last 9 home games. I really like Manoah. We talk about it every time he's on the bump. He's the guy. I also liked the Jays over 4.5 runs because the bats have been hot, but I just don't know about who's in the lineup yet. So if I'm going to make my bet at 8:52 a.m., it's just going to be the Jays to win tonight. They got a day off yesterday. They should be well rested. The bullpen should be well rested, hopefully, and not as taxed as before. So just going to go Jays simply on the money line. I think that's the easiest play at this hour.
Okay. I'm trying to find totals. I kind of like the Jays tonight, too. I just think it's always fine to back Alec Manoah because the team usually wins when Manoah's on the bump. They've got a rested. Their bullpen is not very good, but they're rested coming off of the day off. You're right. The bats have been hot. I'm a little dubious about the George Springer update stuff and whether he's going to play. And I do think that when you see negative line movement like this, that there's probably going to be something that's coming. Again, like we learned yesterday with the NBA draft, is that the book usually tells you more than the insiders do. So trust the book. I don't really like the Pittsburgh Pirates to score very many runs tonight. I do not think that they will get to my guy Jeffrey Springs of the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays have a decent bullpen as well. It's not
heavy
as good
favorites, as it's been. Minus 200.
Yep. But that is why I like them on the first 5 run line. I just think that they are going to be able to lead after 5 innings. So the Tampa Bay Rays minus 137 to have a lead after 5 innings. That is my best bet today because if Jeffrey Springs, the Pittsburgh Pirates are one of the worst teams in baseball at hitting left-handed pitching. They hold a 619 OPS over the last month against lefties. They also strike out an absolute ton. I think that their strikeout rate is the second highest. Yep, second highest in all of Major League Baseball against left-handed pitching. Spring's a good strikeout guy. I think it'll be tough for them to get bats to balls. So I'm going to go with the Rays in the first five innings against the lefty. That's your
Wake and Rake. That's a +198 parlay today without one other person, a little bit less. But you know what? You can put money on it.
Yeah, you could include Jackie's under six.
You could do that.
If you'd like. That was her best bet today. Okay, that's the Wake and Rake for today. Ailish likes the Jays. I like the under in the first, or sorry, the Tampa Bay Rays on the, I'm so used to betting on.
Yeah, I was surprised.
The Rays first five. Have a great weekend, everybody. And again, happy day off to everybody, all of our friends.
And you're getting Monday off, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy long weekend, JD.
All right. See you guys. Take care.